Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traynor here with you. It is it's February 18th as I record this. The show is actually going to drop late on Tuesday night, run into Wednesday. Recorded a little late, unfortunately, because I don't have much of a voice. I've been sick with a head cold, which has affected my voice, so I apologize if I sound a little hoarse. Have done the best I can with trying to restore the voice, but anyway, the content and the show must still go on, and we have a great show for you today. Jason Fitzgerald, who is the site manager and editor of Over the Cap, is going to join us for segments 2 and 3, and he's got some great information regarding some of the new rules that are in place for 2020. It is the final year of the league, of the current CBA, so they have some unique rules that are in place for the final league year, which is 2020, and he's going to talk about that. And he's also going to talk about how some of those rules will affect the New York Giants and some of their contracts. And a couple of other things Jason and I talked about during our interview is they include Leonard Williams, what to do with a contract with him. We talked about Saquon Barkley when his time comes up for a contract, and just a whole bunch of other stuff. So a lot of great information coming up in segments 2 and 3 of today's show. Before we get to segment 2, though, a few other items. Some guests coming up this week on the Locked On Giants podcast. I'm going to have Dan Shanka, who is the head scout of Our Lad. So in my quest to get you guys ready for the combine next week, Dan is going to come on the program. We're going to talk a little bit about the combine, the draft, the prospects, and whatnot. So that's going to be exciting. Amy Trask, yes, the one and only lovely Amy Trask is going to be on the show with me this week as well. We're going to talk CBA. We're going to talk about the game and, you know, always a great time to catch up with Amy. She's just an absolute sweetheart. I get the chance to speak with her on the show once a year, talk to her via Twitter as well, and just really a down-to-earth person. And I'm looking forward to sharing that interview with you. And then a couple of other quick housekeeping notes, some key dates coming up that you might want to circle on your calendar. The Scouting Combine, as you guys know, is next week. It runs from February 25th to March 2nd. Also, February 25th is the first day clubs can designate franchise or transition players or both. This year, one of the new rules is they can use both the franchise and transition tags. And I don't expect the Giants to use both tags. I think they're going to use the transition tag on Leonard Williams. That would be my guess right now. I don't think they will use the franchise tag on anybody. I don't believe they have anybody, you know, really, you know, to use that one on. But anyway, the deadline for that is March 10th. Then, starting on March 16th through the 18th, that is the quote-unquote legal tampering period of free agency. Of course, we all know that teams, you know, do deals and whatnot, and they have discussions before that. They never admit to that, but that's what the combine is for. I mean, you have all 32 NFL general managers and personnel directors and whatnot. They are under the same roof. So along with the agents who are all in town for various seminars and stuff that have to do with the NFLPA. So I would not be surprised if conversations don't start then, you know, some preliminary discussions, especially for trades and stuff. And then March 18th at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern is the official start of the 2020 NFL league year. Free agency, the trading period, all that good stuff gets started. And I don't anticipate it's going to be a very busy time per se for the Giants, even though they're going to have probably upwards of $60 million of cap space. I don't think they're going to go on a wild spending spree. You know, I think back to 2016 when they quickly signed something like five big free agent free agent players in a matter of a week. I don't think they're going to go quite that crazy. I think maybe they'll sign, if I had to take a guess, maybe two or three in addition to Leonard Williams. I do think Leonard Williams is going to be re-signed. You might see a lot more signings on the back end of free agency when guys are a little more affordable, if you will. And I wrote an article for Forbes, actually, which published on Tuesday, and I listed three potential, three potential cost-effective free agents that would fit Giant needs if they were to go that route. So you can check that out on Forbes. So, all right, folks, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, Jason Fitzgerald of OverTheCap.com joins me. Hope you enjoy the interview, which will run in segments 2 and 3. So stay with us. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Giants is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Giant fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Giant fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on Locked On Giants podcast. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
The Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by BlueChew.com. Visit BlueChew.com and enter promo code Locked On to receive your first shipment for only $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com.
Joining me now is Jason Fitzgerald. He is the site owner and salary cap expert at Over the Cap. Really good site, a site I use very often to consult numbers and contracts and whatnot. And Jason, delighted to have you on the program.
Happy to be here.
Jason, let's start off. We're in the final year, or we're about to enter, I should say, the final year of the CBA, and there are several changes to how the salary cap is going to be managed this year. Can you talk a little bit about some of the key changes and how the effect that they're going to have on contracts as teams begin to prepare for free agency?
Sure. There's a couple of different rules that are going to be in place this year. Probably the biggest one, at least as an impact to certain teams, in particular, a team like the Dallas Cowboys, is going to be that every team can use both a franchise and a transition tag this year. Typically, you're only allowed to tag one player a year. So if you have, two or three prime free agents, usually only one of them is going to get tagged and the other guys are going to get to explore free agency. This year is a little bit different. You can actually use two tags. So you can kind of hold the rights to two players. That's probably the biggest advantage that there's going to be for certain teams. Disadvantage on the other end is that normally you're allowed to designate players what's called a June 1 cut for salary cap purposes. Basically, it lets you defer a certain amount of salary cap dead money to the following year. And that's not going to be allowed this year either. For a team like the Giants, that's probably not a big deal. The Giants do have a lot of cap space. For teams that are hard up against the salary cap, the New Orleans Saints, Atlanta Falcons, teams like that, they typically use the June 1 just to create cap room in the summertime to sign rookies and to function during the regular season. And unless they, sign an agreement in the next couple of weeks, that's not going to be allowed.
Do you anticipate something getting done in the next few weeks if for no other reason, because of the cap and how the cap, if you remember the last time they had a new CBA, the cap dip, and they had all these funky rules that they had to work around?
I don't think that it's going to impact the teams too much. They did this a little different than they did the last time. In the last CBA, the final league year actually ended up being uncapped. So teams didn't really have the same kind of restrictions. There were some restrictions in the 2009 year, but teams had kind of planned out for that because I think they knew pretty far in advance that there was going to be a lockout and there wasn't going to be a deal to get done. I don't think the teams are really worried about it too much. You know, there's a couple teams that'll be impacted. I think the question is just going to be, will the players who probably don't have any incentive to really get a deal done right this very second, you know, do they think it's in their best interest to just get it done, get it out of the way and not worry about a labor stoppage next year? I'd lean towards it not getting done. You know, because it's just, well, I guess there's been proposals and we've seen little rumors of things that are being given up by the NFL. You know, typically in these negotiations, the NFL is willing to give up things like practice time and, you know, little non-revenue kind of stuff, you know, more lenient drug testing, perhaps, things along those lines. It's not really impacting the bottom line so much for the players. So I don't think they'll be in a rush to get it done because basically if you don't get it done in the next 3 weeks or so, the next 2 weeks, is there really a point in even getting it done until after the season is finished?
Yeah, good point there. Now, Jason, one of the rules that I find a little confusing for 2020 is the 30% rule. Can you help me make some sense out of that and how that might affect negotiations that might be different from how they've done it in the past?
Sure. So the 30% rule, basically, you know, I whenever I talk about CBA rules and those kind of things, I always reference teams like the Dallas Cowboys or sometimes the Washington Redskins, you know, teams that in the past used to really kind of try and push the limits of what you could do with a contract. They don't really do that anymore, but I always look back at those teams and say, you know, all these rules that are in the CBA, a lot of times are, they're kind of done to prevent teams like that from trying to overstep the CBA again. So what the NFL did not want to ever have happen are basically teams in the final league year finding ways to have a salary cap number for a very expensive player of, say, $2 million. And then next year have a salary cap number of $40 million because there's a possibility that there will be no salary cap. So they don't want it to upset the competitive balance. So what they've come up with is a system that says basically whatever the player is going to earn this year on the salary cap in terms of non-prorated money, meaning pretend the signing bonus doesn't exist. So it's the other parts of the contract. That sets a limit as to the size of a raise a player is allowed to get every year after that. So if a team tries to basically do a contract this year that, for example, would pay a player a $3 million base salary and, I don't know, a big signing bonus. For the purpose of this, the signing bonus is if it doesn't exist. And what that means is that they would only be allowed to increase their salary over that initial $3 million by $900,000 a year. So obviously for a superstar player, that's never going to happen. So for teams that, you know, really kind of use those signing bonuses to try and drive the salary cap numbers down and then kind of push money to the future where those salary cap numbers go up and up and up, you're not going to be able to do that. So you're going to have to see a pretty steady rise in salary cap numbers. So for teams that don't have a lot of salary cap space this year, that's probably going to be a problem. For teams that are flush with cap space, it's not really going to be an issue at all.
Interesting vehicle in there. How do you think, it just seems like every year there's a certain vehicle or two that teams put into contracts. Like lately it's been roster bonuses to kind of ease up on the back end of salary caps, you know, especially if you want to cut a guy. Do you think there's going to be something else that emerges this year in the final year of the CBA?
Well, because of those 30% rules, one of the things that you might see, and we started to see this last year, while the league pretends the signing bonus doesn't exist for the purposes of calculating it, they do allow option bonuses to count. Option bonuses are something that used to be used in the old style rookie contracts all the time. Generally, it's a large bonus that comes in the second year of a contract. Teams have shied away from that because it really makes it hard to cut players in the future, just because the dead money rises so significantly in future years. So with the exception of one or two teams, Atlanta and Carolina being the two notable ones, really no teams have used that. You're going to see teams use that stuff again this year just to comply with the rules. So you may hear reports, from real big media sources that will, give a breakdown on a contract, for example, and they may not understand some of the way these mechanisms work and everything. And you'll hear things reported like, well, you know, there's an option next year, and it's not anything that should make anyone worried or make you think it's a 1-year contract. It's just a mechanism that's going to have to be used to comply with some of the rules. Other things that you may see in some of these contracts that weren't there before are certain types of incentives and contract escalators. And again, that's going to be to comply with some of these rules about the 30% raises and all those things. So you may be able to work some incentives into a contract that teams expect the players to earn. Most of the time when you hear about incentives, teams don't expect the players to earn those incentives. This time around, they will try and craft incentives that will be likely to be earned, but won't count on the cap, for example, this year. And that'll allow them to comply with the rules.
Jason, in terms of the next CBA, the last time the NFL and the NFLPA ratified a CBA, we had a dip in the salary cap. In other words, I think it was down by, $3 million, because they adjusted the calculation and it came out to a $3 million difference. I know it's early and you know, the numbers can change, but do you anticipate that happening again, to where teams that are anticipating having, you know, let's say the salary cap go up to $210 million next year, maybe they're going to have to be disappointed and lower their expectations?
No, I don't think that'll be an issue this time. In the last CBA, what happened was that the way they came up with the revenue share agreement in that, the owners ended up realizing that they gave way too much to the player side. So that CBA, I think the first year it impacted the cap was 2006 for that CBA. And that year the salary cap grew by like $20 million. And, you know, that's at a point in time where you're talking about a salary cap of $87 million, not $188 million or $200 million. So that kind of threw teams, and not so much teams, you know, owners, for a loop, where they were realized, wait a minute, how much did we really give up here? This time around, I think everyone is, on the owner side, I think is pretty happy with the way things have gone. If you look at some of the Packers' financial statements that they've put out, they're much more profitable now than they were back in 2009 and 2010. I think they've had pretty steady growth in that area. So I think if anything, you might see the cap actually go up by a little bit more. Not significant. You know, if it's $10 million a year now, maybe $13 million a year, $14 million. But I don't think you'll have a situation like what occurred in the last CBA, where teams that were anticipating growth rates of $7, $8, $9, $10 million basically saw the salary cap go down by a couple million and not grow at all. You know, the first 3 years of this CBA, there was virtually no growth. So I don't think that's going to be an issue this time.
We're speaking with Jason Fitzgerald. He is the site manager of Over the Cap. Does a really good job. He's also the author of Crunching Numbers, which is an inside look at the salary cap and negotiating player contracts. A really good book, a must read. It's a book that I have it right here on my desk because I'm about to take an advanced course in salary cap management. So it's actually our textbook, and I'm looking forward to really diving into it. Jason, I want to talk to you about Leonard Williams and his contract, because, you know, that was a controversial trade, I guess, for the Giants, you know, given what they had to give up to get him. And now, you know, is he worth the big money? Do they slap a franchise tag on him? Do they maybe transition tag him? What are your thoughts about whether or not the Giants should tag him? And what kind of contract realistically could Leonard Williams be looking at?
Leonard Williams is a tough player to evaluate. He's not a bad player by any stretch. He's got a very high draft grade. Usually players that aren't bad players and have a high draft grade kind of end up getting overpaid. If you look at the performance on the field from Williams, you know, he's a good player against the run, has his moments where he pressures the quarterback, has had issues with sacks in his time with the Jets and his half season with the Giants, does get a little bit of pressure, but he tracks financially probably with players that earn $12 million, $13 million a year. He's never going to take a contract that's that low. The upside, just based on his physical ability, is so high. I would imagine that he's probably thinking that he's worth in the ballpark of $17, $18 million a season. You know, it's a really tricky one. I don't know how many teams are out there that would pay him $18 million a season. But I don't know, after the Giants kind of made that wacky trade, I don't know if the Giants can just let him walk. If it was me, I'd probably go with the transition tag on him. It's a little bit of a lower number. I don't have his salary from last year in front of me. I don't think his salary was high enough to where the numbers would all be the same. But if it was me, all things being equal, I'd probably transition tag him. Let the market dictate the salary.
Yeah, that's exactly something I had written about, because I think the franchise tag is, what, $15 million for a defensive tackle? And yeah. And then there's the other question about, you know, is he going to consider himself a DE or a DT? I think I read someplace, it might have been on your site, that he was in, he had filed a grievance to be reclassified or something.
There are players who have done that. I don't remember off the top of my head. I don't remember if he did that or not. I know other players have. Jadeveon Clowney went through that last year. They ended up kind of coming to an agreement on what position he'd be classified as. I think they split the number. Sheldon Richardson, who used to be on the Jets and was traded to Seattle, he had an issue with that when he was a member of the Seahawks. I think there was a player on the Browns that went through that. There have been a couple of players that have kind of gone that route. My guess is, yeah, he'd obviously be looking to be classified as a defensive end. You know, there's more money in that designation. Would it lead to a grievance? Yeah, I guess it's possible, depending on what they officially classify him as. But I would be certain that he'd be looking to be called a defensive end.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how they classify him. Now, when Dave Gettleman spoke to the media at the end of the year, he mentioned something about keeping aside about $20 million of the cap space for renegotiations. And I'm just wondering, you know, I look at the Giants roster and I don't think there's a whole lot of guys right now who, you know, maybe they want to lock up, but is there an advantage to getting them locked up under this terms of this current CBA as opposed to waiting to the next CBA? Or is it just a matter of, let's get them now while, you know, the money is realistic and we'll reevaluate in a couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter of what you're saying. It's just, you know, sometimes you get deals done early, you get things a little bit better. I don't think there's going to be an explosion of money in the next CBA. If there was, yeah, there'd be a benefit to locking players up right now. But I don't think there will be. I would say that his estimate of holding off $20 million just for that is probably really on the high end. I'd say most teams usually will hold off maybe $10 million, $12 million now. Maybe he's thinking along the lines of there's some rules in place this year that maybe they want to have a little extra money. But I mean, I'm just quickly looking at their free agents here, you know, coming up in 2021. You know, I mean, there's really not a lot that I would see as, you know, players that you would need to hold a lot of money for. I mean, Evan Ingram, they'll pick up, I think, the option on him. I think he's an option here. But, yeah, I mean, he's a good player, but tight ends don't get paid significant amounts. Tomlinson, I mean, it's not a group where you'd say, okay, you know, there's really a lot of guys that we want to, you know, extend come November or something like that. So I would say he's probably overestimating that number.
I think Tomlinson is probably the one they're going to look at this year. But then next year, if I'm not mistaken, Barkley's up, can renegotiate, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right?
He can, yeah. So once you're 3 years in, unless some rule changes or something, after the end of the third year, so as soon as the regular season is done, they could lock up Barkley to an extension. He's going to have to watch pretty closely, I would think, to see what happens with Christian McCaffrey this year. The running back contracts that have come down, Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Devonta Freeman. I mean, it all ends up being a disaster for the team. If Carolina really holds firm on a Christian McCaffrey deal, that's going to give the Giants probably a lot of leverage to not go wild when it comes to Barkley's new contract as well. It's a real tricky spot, I think, for everybody. It's a tough spot for the players. They give you a good performance in those first 4 years of their career, sometimes the first 5 years. It just goes downhill so quickly. It's tough for a team to have that kind of money tied up in players who spend so much time either hurt or just being ineffective.
You've mentioned that Christian McCaffrey deal, and I'm just kind of curious, what are your expectations for a deal like that? What do you think is realistic? Because it sounds like that's going to be the model that the Giants are going to use when they have to do Barkley again.
Yeah, that's a hard one. Elliott's at the top of the market right now. I think it's $15 million. So I would imagine McCaffrey's probably going to ask for 18. They would probably, I'm sure, be happy with 15.5 or 16. I just can't see Carolina doing that, especially, you listen to their kind of new ownership group there talking about being more analytics driven and, all those kind of buzzwords that are really big in the NFL community, I think, right now. You can't be an analytically driven front office or claim to be that and then turn around and pay $16 million to a running back. I kind of feel as if, if they're looking at it that way, they would probably max out their offer somewhere between $10 and $12 million a year. I don't know if he would go for that just based on the way the last couple of contracts have come down, for some of those big star players, and maybe he'll hold out. I don't really have a good feel for it. It's just, I've thought all along, when Gurley signed that big deal, I think what I wrote about that was this was going to be the guy that was going to determine basically if running back contracts were going to go up again or if they were just going to take a big hit after he signed that contract. And, Gurley's knee pretty much fell apart the minute he signed that deal. And then you had David Johnson, who fell apart the minute the ink was dry on his contract. And, Bell just never fit in with the Jets. And so you look at those three guys and you just look at the way things have gone and you just have to be so careful with them. And I think they've hurt McCaffrey. Maybe he will be the guy to buck the trend. Maybe Barkley will be the guy to buck the trend. I don't know. But if you're a team, I think you just have to be so cautious. So I just don't have a feel for how those teams are really going to look at the players.
Final question, Jason. The Giants, because they drafted so poorly, they've restocked their cupboard, which, is a good thing. So they have a lot of guys right now on rookie deals. Daniel Jones, Dexter Lawrence, DeAndre Baker all came in. They're all at the same point on their rookie deal. Barkley is a year ahead of them. At some point, though, they're going to all have to be paid. Do you anticipate that creating a logjam or a problem for the Giants down the line? Because now all of a sudden they're going to have to pay out probably these big bucks to these franchise type players. And now, does that maybe present a potential cap jam for them down the line, you think?
No, if you manage the situation properly and the Giants, whether you want to say they have or haven't in recent years, and you probably lean towards haven't, they've carried so much dead money and they've had a couple issues, with the cap here and there. They're basically at a point where they're resetting their roster. So, this is the time for a team like the Giants to take a step back, reevaluate everything you're doing and say, okay, how can we do this better in the future? And teams usually can handle a number of players coming due even at one time. I mean, you look at the Rams, and you know, the Rams have a lot of big contracts on the team, and I wouldn't say the Rams are in, you know, a salary cap disaster. The Eagles have a ton of high paid players, and they may have some issues somewhere down the line in the future, but I mean, they've been able to get by and keep signing players for years now. The Saints, you know, they've been able to get through it. I think the bigger thing is, as long as the players are good, you know, you can find ways to maneuver within the cap. Where teams fall into trouble is when they overpay players who just aren't that good. You know, or just bad luck sometimes. You know, you can't control injuries. You know, injuries happen. There's nothing you can do about that. But I think you can plan out your cap management and your contract management to deal with a number of high-paid players. You just have to do it right, and you just have to stick to a plan. You know, if you become haphazard with the way that you approach the cap, that's where you get yourself into trouble. And, you know, hopefully the Giants will, you know, have taken these last couple of months as they kind of, you know, struggled with the cap last year, to kind of come in with a battle plan that is not short-sighted, you know, a plan that's going to get them through the next 3 years, you know, and have them flush with cap space and, you know, everything else to be able to handle the situation if all those players pan out and they become, you know, kind of the stars they expect them to be.
He is Jason Fitzgerald. You can find his work on overthecap.com. He does a great job updating contracts, especially during free agency, which is going to be a very busy time for everybody, including yourself, tracking all those numbers down. Jason, really appreciate you taking the time, and good luck with free agency and keeping all the numbers updated.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Giant fans, that was Jason Fitzgerald of Over the Cap. Make sure you stay tuned to the Locked on Giants podcast. Again, this week we're going to have Dan Shanka of Our Lads. Amy Trask is coming up on the program. So lots more as we get you ready for the Combine next week in Indianapolis, where I will be on site and I will try to bring you interviews, try to catch up with some other draft analysts and whatnot. So plenty of stuff coming up here on the Locked on Giants podcast. Have a great day.